This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange.
This pilot, though, who flew Barack Obama during his 2008 presidential campaign, says UFOs are real, and he's seen one firsthand.
An unidentified object seen over the sky above the Rosedale area.
The shot today video that's got all of Texas talking, probably the whole country, from iReporter, who shot this on a cell phone near Stephenville, Texas. The UFO, according to witnesses, and the witnesses include local police and other public figures.
When several dozen residents looked up and saw a UFO more than once.
Three very mysterious shiny lights over Breckenridge have police and residents puzzled.
Tonight we have never before seen videotape of UFOs over Colorado.
If you noticed strange lights in the sky over the weekend, you aren't alone. KCTV5's Alan Schoaf went to Lee's Summit to get to the bottom of more than a dozen UFO sightings.
Never before seen footage of UFO sightings this year being shown at a conference in Pontefract.
Local police never definitively said who's to blame. Locals say it has to be something out of this world.
I was taking a random picture, zoomed it in, and there it was. There was a UFO.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unbelievable, and the uncanny.
Oh, and indeed, uncanny times we live in. Johnny and Billy here.
Yes.
And we talk strange things, whether it's ghosts, near-death experience, afterlife, conspiracies, Sasquatch, all sorts of fun stuff. And our guest today is Dr. Michael Bryan. He's an author who I met at the UFO Paranormal Summit back at the first week of March before this pandemic occurred. It just had just kind of started, and it was before any of the stay-at-home orders or anything. And, Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you. And
yeah, welcome, Michael.
Thank you.
So you were with the MUFON group. How were you involved in MUFON and then the whole UFO phenomenon?
Let me go back a few thousand years to when I was about 15 years old. At around the age of 15, I did two very intelligent things in my life. One is when my buddies and I walked into the woods when they wanted to start smoking, I decided, nope, not going to do that. Not good. My parents coughed early in the mornings. I knew I didn't want to do that. Also, took notice of flying saucers at that time. I think it was either Look magazine or Life magazine that had an article, I think it was like 1952 or later, all about the weird, strange subject of UFOs. And I thought to myself, well, this looks important. And I stuck with it. So when I had gone to graduate school, when I was in Hawaii, I became the state director for MUFON for Hawaii, and I did that for about 10 years. And in that time, I got to know so many people in the UFO field, and especially I got to know Walt Andrus, who was director of MUFON at that time. And I had left Hawaii. I'd come to Pacific Northwest, and Walt was saying, well, let's find another role for you. And jointly, we came up with the idea that I would become MUFON's ambassador at large. Now, hardly anybody's ever even heard of that. But at that time, I'd been bitten by the travel bug. I was going all over the world. I was somewhat educated, hopefully somewhat intelligent. And Walt thought that I might be a good person to liaison. So I liaise. And got to know so many people in this field on a first-name basis. And living up on Bainbridge Island, not too far from where Maureen Morgan, the current Washington State Director, hangs out in Port Townsend, I made the connection with Maureen and attend most of her productions. And she and I have just I tried to be as helpful as I could be to Washington MUFON. So I've been helping her man her tables and encouraging people to sign up for MUFON. And I've probably gone to a couple hundred conferences over all these years, and most of the people in today's modern day ufology do know me from being at these conferences all these years.
On your website, michaelbryan.com, I notice you have some interesting books that kind of fall within this, the subjects that we cover here on the show. You have The Paranormal Pub, The Road to Strange, Travel Tales of the Paranormal. Can you explain a little bit of what that's about?
Yeah, I just want to preface that a little bit. I want to say that I had been quite the scientific type of person, kind of nerdy, geeky, all the way from high school through college. And I started out in engineering, and I really became the scientist, so to speak. And I was headed to become a chemical engineer. I attended Carnegie Mellon for a year, and I said, I don't want to do that. So I quit that, came back to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where I grew up, and enrolled in clinical psychology and did my bachelor and master's degree in psychology there. And so there was the scientific part of me, a social scientist. Well, I then got to the point where, what was I going to do the PhD in? And I was headed towards doing that in clinical psychology, which is, you know, interesting field. But then I thought, I'm bitten by the travel bug. I'll go to the University of Hawaii and do my PhD. And besides, I'll study the psychology of travel. So big switch from clinical psychology to the psychology of travel. Well, what happened is I decided early on the best way to learn about the psychology of travel would be to not only travel, which I did a tremendous amount of, but why not interview people, collect their stories, their personal experiences, and that's a good way to learn about the psychology of travel. Just ask them. Well, with this parallel interest in UFOlogy or ufology, I began to collect stories from people, kind of something like Forrest Gump would have done. And lo and behold, some nearly 2,000 people later, interviews later, I collected hundreds, if not thousands, of personal accounts of people in their travels. But also, in a parallel way, I was interviewing people about any UFO experiences they may have had or paranormal experiences, sort of a two-pronged approach. But I would often say to everybody I was going to do an interview with, well, what kind of really unusual, interesting experiences have you had, travel or not? And so I began to collect, like I say, thousands of stories. And over the years, I became friends with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who your listening audience must have known. Sadly, she passed away last year. But we'd known each other over the years, and she knew that I was interviewing people and collecting stories of all kinds, and she knew me from the UFO field in particular. I met her in the late 80s, and she we got together a few times because she grew up in this area of Washington. We'd come out and visit, and sort of through a synchronicity, we'd find that she'd be around and I'd be around. We had meetings, and she came up with the idea, why don't we do a series of books together, and we named it the Road to Strange series. So that's how that got started. And she and I produced two books, again, based mainly on the interviews that I collected, but she certainly had some stories that she collected of her own and her husband, Joe Redmiles. And so the first one in the series was called The Road to Strange, Travel Tales of the Paranormal. And the focus there was people who, in their travels in particular, began to have some kinds of paranormal, very strange experiences in their travels. So we thought that would be a good initial focus. So we've had a number of ghost stories, premonitions, synchronicities, a lot of weird stuff. And the second book in the series we dedicated to the notion of UFOs, aliens, and high strangeness of that type. So those stories were fairly well distinguished from one another. And before Rosemary really became sick, we started in the third book on the Road to Strange, but we hadn't quite yet decided to focus. And sadly, I have not been able to complete that book yet. And her husband, Joe Red Miles, is continuing the company. Rosemary's publishing company is called Visionary Living. And as you know, she's jointly authored some books with other people in the fields of the paranormal and beyond. And Joe has said that he wants to continue the company Visionary Living, and we should start talking about a third book in this series in time when he's been able to focus more on that, and he's close to retirement from his involvement with AT&T. So we'll pick up on volume 3, but meanwhile I'm assembling material. I've collected thousands of stories, so I'm kind of arraying them and dividing them into different categories to see where we might go with that. So Joe and I will have some conversations about that fairly soon.
And where can people get your books?
Well, the easiest way is online through Amazon or your favorite online bookseller. That's the easiest way. If you happen to be at the next UFO summit.
Yay!
You know, or hopefully maybe McMinniman's McMinnville UFO conference, if that takes place, or if you're in Eureka Springs, that's been postponed till May, you'll see me in person. I'd love to meet you, talk with you, and if you like one of these two books, I'll certainly autograph them. Or you can send me an email, And let me give you that email address. Is that all right at this point?
Sure,
go ahead.
So it's michaelbryan@gmail.com. And my last name is spelled B-R-E-I-N, michaelbryan@gmail.com. And if you want to get a copy of this book directly from me, I'll autograph it and send it to you by book rate, you know. So I'm happy to do that. But otherwise, online with Amazon.
Can you tell us about just one of the stories, people that you've interviewed, so that we get a sense of what your book is about and what kind of questions you're asking people and what kind of information they're giving you?
Very good. Very good series of questions. I'd like to maybe tell you briefly one of my personal experiences, which has kind of, it's an amazing series of not one synchronicity type of experience. You know, many of us talk about a synchronicity that we have in our travels, running into somebody who you'd never expect. And sometimes that could happen twice with the same person. Well, I had an experience that I had five synchronicities all at the same time.
Wow.
Sounds weird, but I want to tell that one because it's the one that says to me, you know, when you listen to people, they tell you multiple experiences sometimes, but when it's your own experience, you can say two things that ring true for you. Number one, I know what I saw, and if but one of my experiences is true, or when somebody shares a story with me and a series of things that happens to them, if but one of those is true, it increases the odds of being very convincing that reality is not only strange, but these things really do happen, they're true. So I'll tell the synchronicity story fairly quickly. I developed a series of travel guides to sightseeing by public transportation, and I did them for cities around the world, and I had about, by the time I completed that series, about 14 different ones. So, for example, I did one on the Paris Metro, how to see the top 50 visitor attractions by the metro and how to walk to them when you get to the closest metro stop, with a gigantic map of the metro and showing exactly where these points are. And I thought that would be a really useful thing. And I went and I researched all these cities and produced about 14 to date. So I would go to these book fairs and promote my travel guide series. And I used to go to this one book fair called Book Expo America, have a little table, array out my printed travel guides and show them. And, okay, so here I was living in southern Oregon. I was about ready to board the aircraft from Medford, Oregon, to go to the book fair in New York City. It was the end of May, and I was going to land in Philadelphia, visit my sister. I grew up in that area, and then take a train to New York for the book fair on the last weekend of the month May. So I'm on the United Airlines flight. I grab the Hemispheres magazine, and I put it in my attaché case, and I'm thinking, wouldn't it be nice if I could write to United Airlines and say, oh, I have this neat travel guide series here. What do you think? Maybe I get a review of it. So I put that in my attaché case, land in Philadelphia at the end of the day, visit my sister. Now I get on the train to go up to New York City for the weekend to do the book fair, and I pass a sign. The train passes the sign, Rahway, New Jersey. And you know how sometimes you think, oh, you know, somebody maybe from here or there. I looked at the sign, and I immediately remembered I met a guy from Rahway, New Jersey once. And I was in Carnegie Mellon in engineering. The guy was a senior physics student there, and I knew him and talked to him. And one day he said, oh, I'm from Rahway, New Jersey. So here I am, passing that sign with nothing else to do. And I say, I remember that guy 42 years ago. And then I get to New York. I do the book fair. I get on the plane from New York City back to Medford, Oregon. And now it's June 1st. So I grab the new issue of Hemispheres magazine, put it in my attaché case, and go home to Ashland, Oregon, where I was living. And I go in through my front door, and there's a huge pile of mail on the table. And I look at it, a big white envelope that says Hemispheres magazine. Ha! Huh. I open up. Oh, there's the magazine that I just picked up on the airplane, the June one, the latest one. It says stapled to it, see page 24. I open it up. There's a review of my travel guides right in that Hemisphere magazine. Oh, well, wasn't that weird? All right. Now I go upstairs to check my emails and look and see if I got any orders for my travel guides, which I do periodically. Oh, and there was an order from Ashland, Oregon, where I'm living. And I thought to myself, I never get any orders for these things from where I live. Sometimes I might get an order from Spain or Mexico or somewhere else in the United States, but this one was literally down the street in Ashland, Oregon. And I look at the name. Oh, my God, that's the name of the guy I knew from Carnegie Mellon. That's the same name. And they ordered guides. So I said to them, as a joke in an email, well, would you like me to personally deliver these to you, or would you like to come visit a llama ranch not far from where you are and see what it is? And they said, we'll come to the llama ranch. So then I emailed him back, and I said, are you the Jan Chaikin from Rahway, New Jersey, I saw on the sign on the train this past weekend? And I get a phone call back. I would be that Jan Chaikin. So, yes, it was the same guy from Carnegie Mellon who lived in Rahway, New Jersey, who saw this review of my travel guides in Hemispheres magazine, who ordered them because he and his wife compiled crime statistics in the New York subway. So what an interesting series of coincidences that was.
Wow, yeah.
Synchronicity. So, I mean, I didn't have to convince myself of these, and I had a lot of other synchronicities. So synchronicity is certainly a strange kind of event that happens to many, many people, but having compound ones is not as common, but it's certainly convincing. So that's one of my stories. I had five or six of my own personal experiences in that book, along with many other stories of people that I just routinely interviewed, and they would tell ghost stories. They would have premonitions in their travels. It's just interesting that about 5% of all the stories that I've collected, all the interviews, touched upon a paranormal or UFO subject, because to these people, those are what stand out as strange experiences, and they're happy to share them. And so I make a practice of working through these thousands of stories, organizing them for a series of books. So it shouldn't surprise you that although you see The Road to Strange with a collection of stories on travel tales of paranormal and ghost type of experiences, and the second book on UFOs, it should be no surprise that I collected a variety of other kinds of things. My next book that's coming out is going to be Travel Tales, Close Calls, and Great Escapes.
So that sounds interesting.
Been in dangerous situations and I managed to get away and survive those. And prior to that, I just produced a book not that long ago called Travel Tales, Women Alone, The Me Too of Travel, which is all about safety and security of women traveling solo, alone. And I have about 100 accounts of women in all kinds of situations where most of them were able to be okay, be safe and secure. Some weren't. Some disappeared. Some wound up in as slaves, no doubt, in Middle Eastern countries. And I try to create a series of travel tips. I like that not only can I write about the strange and the unusual and the weird, but I sure like to emphasize safety and security in travels and how people can maximize their experiences at the lowest risks.
It is pretty risky to travel these days, isn't it?
It is, but for some, there's always the diehards who, in fact, an interesting article just came out in the South China News, a Hong Kong paper, morning newspaper, and they interviewed me along with some other people about, you know, travel in these days with the virus, and they wanted to talk about dromomania, if you've ever heard of that. I know.
No.
A couple of years ago. A dromomaniac, so to speak. This sounds funny, but I mean, there are people who have compulsions to travel. We've all known these people. We've encountered them who seem to do nothing but travel. And so this story was about, what about people who are kind of compulsive travelers? How are they dealing with this whole virus pandemic or epidemic, we should probably call it? And so that just came out not that long ago, and I shared whatever knowledge I had on the subject. And, you know, the true addicted kind of traveler has a whole different approach to taking risks than most of us do. So I have no doubt that there are probably some compulsive lifetime continual travelers who are kind of holding up and kind of resting maybe on a beach side in Morocco until this whole thing settles down some more, and they're more willing to take risks and they have less fear and they're more independent. So you won't hold them back for very long compared to the rest of us.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. More coming up with author Michael Brine and The Road to Strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. Our guest today, author Michael Brine, author of The Road to Strange, Travel Tales of the Paranormal and Beyond.
So what about other risks like violence and you know, people that want to take all your money.
Yeah, you know,
scams.
I mean, there's tons of that. But oddly, or maybe not so odd, most of us aren't going to be confronted with that. But it can happen, and there's just certain things we need to do to minimize that. And one is, strange as that may seem, is to be more awake. You know, most of us, when we live in our normal mundane workaday world, and this is a different world right now, of course, but most of us lead relatively predictable, reliable, understandable worlds, lives where we don't really think that much of what we're doing and who we're with and where we're going. Of course, this virus has made us a lot more conscious of our interactions with people. But I'm saying that most of us might, if we don't have very much travel experience, go abroad and just have the same mindset that you have at home, as you're not overly concerned, cautious, and mistrusting. And Americans tend to pour our souls out, pour our hearts out, maybe believe people a little more than we should. And I shouldn't be saying that. I want people to believe my books. But, you know, just not as critical. And we're not running on all cylinders.
Right.
As we do at home in our normal workaday worlds.
Right.
And so, the more you travel, the more you become a traveler than, say, a tourist, and the more immersed you are in situations, the more you pay attention to differences, and then you begin to scope this out a little bit more. Well, I was almost pickpocketed on the Madrid Metro. You know, I had things in my arms, posters, books. I was a victim in waiting, and I was standing right in the center. I was the target. Somebody sitting on a bench right near me scuffed my trousers. Now, that's really strange. How would somebody's foot brush against your trousers and scuff them in a subway car on the Madrid Metro? And I wasn't really paying a whole lot of attention, but I thought that was a little strange. And I looked down, naturally. I looked down at the guy, and he's rhythmically, you know, brushing that pants like, oh, I'm so sorry, I scuffed your pants. And what am I doing? I'm looking down at him doing that, and I am being subtly hypnotized, right? And then what I didn't realize at first, there was two other guys behind me while this guy was scuffing my trousers. But hey, the news is good. I had a safari jacket on with 22 pockets. Okay. And these sons of you know what's got nothing. And I even turned around, I looked at them while I was not really being that conscious of why I was looking at them. But the metro train stopped at the next station, the doors open, and these three guys piled out of there. They got nothing, but I could feel it in my pockets all day long. Wondering what the hell did they get? So I was a travel psychologist, but yet I was also a victim.
Yeah.
And oh boy, I'll tell you, I have been living travel psychology for all these years, and I love writing about it. And Travel Tales of the Strange and the Paranormal is all psychology as well. And so it's got me really attuned and interested in these things. And so I normally present a different picture about ufology and the paranormal than a lot of people, because I had one foot in the science boat and one foot in the weird, strange paranormal and UFO stuff, almost like a boat ready to leave the dock with one leg on the dock and one leg in the boat. But I have managed to survive any kind of harassment that I could get as a graduate student with these interests. I just kept these interests pretty much in the closet while I was finishing up my PhD, because I knew that if I was really vocal about these weird and strange subjects, that would not bode well for my academic career.
Have you seen a UFO?
No, I have not. Well, I'm going to back up. I know I'm connected in some way to it, but as a baby, I'm going to say I was probably like two or three or one, I was in my crib in my bedroom and crying and looking up at my window, and the Venetian blinds were all down, and I saw a green elf-like entity come through the blinds and disappear into my toy closet. And I thought, well, I didn't know, think at the time I was hallucinating. I didn't have that kind of wisdom at one or two, but I definitely did see something. I don't know what that was, and I never had any experience like that ever again. The property, the ranch that I had in Southern Oregon, had been known to have some paranormal things on this ranch. It was really isolated and remote, and I do remember I had a tenant in the cottage next door to me who was up there with her father moving out, and she wouldn't say a thing about it. He got me aside and wanted to explain because he felt bad that they were just leaving and she was moving out of my tenant cottage. And he told me about what looked like a classic sort of UFO experience where the whole place lit up and she got scared. She thought she heard strange voices and she couldn't even talk about it. She left. I think I had an experience one night where I felt like I was picking up on some kind of a communication, maybe, by something in the area. Now, Southern Oregon and Oregon itself certainly been a place of many, many experiences reported by people. I've been very active with the Oregon MUFON people as well when I lived down there, and still to this day. So I haven't particularly had anything I can really put my finger on a personal UFO experience, but I certainly studied it for all these years, read all these books, everything I could get my hands on, got to know most of the people in modern ufology on a first name basis, and that's why Wald, I guess, wanted to appoint me as a MUFON ambassador at large, which I still retain to this day, and liaise as often as I can about MUFON. And back to the beginning of our talk here, that's how I got involved in working with and supporting Maureen, the Washington State director. So that's, you know, pretty much up to current day. But, yes, I've had a lot of personal paranormal experiences, a lifetime of those. And that has directed my interest these days, too, to interviewing. I have probably interviewed about 15 people or so who have combined either paranormal experiences or UFO experience or both. And I've been sort of making an informal study of people with multiple kinds of experiences, often of both types. And that's certainly going to wend its way into either the next Road to Strange book, or in that series, or another book, talking about people who tend to have both sorts of experiences in their lives, and what, how it's affected their lives, their philosophy of life, and what can someone learn maybe by looking at a dozen or so people who've had multiple experiences of both types. So it's really interesting, and it's new tack, I think. I don't know of anybody else really looking at it from that point of view, but that's some things I'm working on locally. Yes, not a lot of personal UFO stuff directly, but a lot of paranormal experiences. So, and an interest in the ufology that won't quit. So I do think I'm wrapped up in that some way in my life, maybe, which I will discover as time goes on.
You know, Southern Oregon, that's where I had my second Sasquatch experience, in the Siskiyou Mountains. I'm sure you're familiar with the Siskiyou Mountains.
Yes, yes. When I was living in Oregon, I went up to Grants Pass, and I met him, and I talked to him about his experience, which I'm sure Johnson, at the time when I met him, and he related his experience with his family and the Bigfoot experience, I believed him. I found him credible. The man had, at the time, a psychological family practice. And, you know, this stuff can get you in trouble.
Right.
With subjects like that. And I found him to be very credible. And I saw some of the plaster casts of footprints that he made. In your experience, you didn't get video, right? He said it was recorded.
Yeah, we recorded audio, and you see, the thing about his habituation techniques, he was trying to earn their trust, and every time he had tried putting up trail cams or having video cams, they just made it known that they don't like that. So he just put them away. You know, he would record audio almost in a sneaky way. He would his parabolic is shaped like a frying pan. So he would put the parabolic dish by his frying pan so it looked like just one of those. Yeah, we didn't even try to attempt to get video just because, you know, again, he was trying to earn their trust. So,
well, I want to just mention to you that my involvement in ufology at the time led me to comment to him when he and an assistant somewhere in Africa was living up there, and we all met together at Grants Pass. And they, at the time, were more inclined to think of this as just another kind of biological creature visiting us and having a presence on Earth. And I brought up the subject that I had heard in some other accounts of Bigfoot experiences, that there were, on occasion, beeping sounds, kind of electronic beeping sounds heard or associated with this. And I said, I think there could be, or some people think, there may be a UFO connection to some of the Bigfoot stuff. And they all, both of them kind of guffawed, these were creatures.
Right.
Because the other guy was kind of a biologically oriented scientist type, and they didn't think about that. But I think years later, I think he may have changed his mind.
Yeah.
Back to our conversation and thought about what I had said at that time.
Right, and I see more and more... Sasquatch citizen scientists kind of changing their tune. They go in, you know, with thinking one way. They come out just thinking things that, you know, you'd never think that they would think in a million years. You know, they kind of change their tune.
Well, this is my whole lifetime of involvement in these subjects, and that's certainly one of the effects all this has had on me.
So what do you think UFOs, you know, where do you think they come from? A different dimension, a different area in the galaxy or in the, you know, the universe? What's your take on all of this stuff?
Well, you know, I don't have any extra insights necessarily. But
you have an opinion,
right? In talking with these people who have had a lifetime of various events, I've certainly come to think that some of the things that they perceive, like UFO sightings, other people are not seeing them. But they are, and I believe they are. I think that the phenomena can present itself to people with either others seeing and sharing it at the time or not. Too often people talk about, well, this is a highway that's always packed with cars, you know, and there's no cars. Now, how does that happen? So anyway, I think it can be a combination of things. Interdimensionality, also involving travel. I don't know that our science in the 2000s, 2020, is going to be the same as our science in the year 3020 or 133,020. We don't have the total scoop on science, and we're probably not even close to it. So if we're thinking in terms of earth, air, fire, and water, but in 2020 terms, I don't think we have the concepts, the breadth of understanding to say that science is much more than earth, air, fire, and water. I mean, I'm exaggerating, of course, but we're going to know so much more about the universe in many, many, many years to come. And so our perception and understanding and description and explanations of things, you and me, all of us included, are limited by our concepts, our scientific concepts that are couched and are just beyond medieval understanding of the universe. So when we say interdimensional or extraterrestrial, and what we use these terms, even 100 different terms to explain, to label, I think that's going to fall short of what science is going to be like hundreds and thousands and millions of years from now, in such a way that we will think differently. We won't be the earth, air, fire, and water of 2020 is not going to be the categories that we think of things in a million years from now. So what does that mean? It means that whatever, you know, like go back to general semantics. Alfred Korzybski, who said in a book on general semantics, the map is not the territory. The map of what we think is the territory is our compilation of concepts, but only in terms of the state of knowledge that we have. And I know if that sounds a little weird and bizarre, I'm saying that however we attempt to describe any of this or all of this in part or in whole is conditioned by our ways of understanding it. And it's going to be much different as we learn so much more about the universe. So, but speculating now, I say, yeah, I think we've got extraterrestrial travelers, and I think we may have dimensional travelers who live in parallel different forms and parallel ways that their energy comes together into some sort of existence and being and overlaps with us to certain extents, or they can move between these. It's going to be some or all of the above, not simply one thing or another. And yeah, I have no doubt that there are people driving around in spaceships and maybe who can even traverse space faster than the speed of light and have ways of doing that. Yes, I think there are those. And I think maybe we're seeing a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And by the way, is anybody looking at the Skinwalker thing on the History Channel? Anybody following that?
I saw one episode.
What'd you think?
I thought it was pretty cool. I was under the impression that he sold it and moved on, and is that true?
Robert Bigelow, who a lot of us have begun to hear about, he's been very active in the UFO field and also space, as you know. He's got some contracts coming with NASA, I guess, to service astronauts in space. Mm-hmm. But Robert Bigelow bought that ranch and had a whole study done with scientists, and their intent was to do as good a scientific study and document what was going on in that ranch as they possibly could. But the whole thing got sabotaged, and at best, all these people could talk about, and these are fairly esteemed scientific types of people with really good reputations, all that they could do is just talk anecdotally about their experiences. And then Bigelow sold the ranch to another guy who I'm going to say is a character, but this is a man who has a genuine interest in continuing looking at that ranch and has the resources, seems to be a well-to-do kind of guy. And so this team seems to be scientifically oriented, but yet they're very cautious and they're open and accepting, open-minded towards the possibility of some really bizarre things happening that we don't understand. I've watched a couple of episodes, and yeah, it's kind of set up on a parallel to the the Oak Island thing, which I'm binging on and addicted to. But it's kind of run in that similar way. But it's very interesting, and I think it certainly gets you thinking about all of this. So that's where episode 2 is at, and it's going to continue, and we'll see what happens.
Bill, you got anything?
I got nothing. I'm just enjoying listening.
I got nothing.
To what you're talking about, and I have not watched that show at all. So.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting show. You should check it out.
To be continued.
Right.
Yeah, I will.
Well, we are out of time, my friends.
Holy cow, time flies, doesn't it?
Sure does, especially when there's the virus out there.
Right.
That's right. Because it's chasing us.
What have you been doing to pass the time and to keep yourself entertained? Or are you doing anything different with your life besides just staying in?
Yeah. Involved with my stories. I am writing these stories right one after the other and just working on my stories and my books and interacting with people on Facebook and FaceTime and Skype, people I haven't talked to for one lady 27 years ago.
Wow.
We went on a trip together. We were on the same trip. So I am connecting, reconnecting with people.
How can we connect with you online?
Online, I'm on Facebook, and my Facebook photo has a picture of me playing conga drums in the Diamond Head Crater Festival in 1969. So if there, you'll see that. And my last name is Brein, Michael Brein, and I have a page on the ambassador's page for ufology. I have the travel psychologist page and my own basic page. And then my website, www.michaelbrein.com, Brein, and my email, michaelbrein@gmail.com. And I welcome calls and emails and conversations. And should anybody be interested in the book in the Road to Strange series, we talked about that earlier. You can go to Amazon, or you can contact me, and I can get you an autographed copy. So, I'm pretty active on Facebook, and continuing my work, and loving to see people in person at these various conferences, and I'm sure looking forward to next year's UFO Summit with all this horrible pandemic stuff behind us. So... that's the answer to your question.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk with us. We hope you'll come back and be a guest again on the show.
Love to.
Yeah, thank you very much, Michael. Really appreciate you coming on.
You're welcome, and I enjoyed this thoroughly.
Good.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you would like to hear back episodes or re-listen to this episode, if you want to yell at Bill for his New Age TUI, just log on to strangeharbor.net.
And stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.